You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Opening up the mailbag. Happy Thursday, everybody. Ending the All-Star break with some fun. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. On the other line, 2 days in a row, my co-host, Adam Friedman. Adam, how are you doing since I last talked to you?
I'm doing pretty well. It feels like it's only been a quick minute.
We're recording this right after our award show from yesterday, but mailbags are fun. Hope you guys caught this one on Twitter. We didn't want this one to get as many questions as before. Not that we don't love your questions, but we're...
You send too many damn questions sometimes.
I deleted the tweet after we got enough questions. So if you feel like you missed it, it's because you did miss it. I promise we won't be doing that much in the future, but we wanted to really limit it.
So maybe at some point we'll do a mailbag, and then it'll be broken into a whole week of segments.
5 days. I know. I love all the questions. It's legit fun, but it's like it's impossible to manage. All right. First one up is from at Doma, D-O-M-A, Sabonis. So combining the S into one word. Sabonis on his fan page. He didn't actually mean this to be a mailbag question, but he tweeted it at us right after I did it. So we're just going to do it. Just going to throw this out there for some All-Star break discussion, but thoughts on picking up Joakim Noah. This would be as a free agent, kind of biomarket-ish. Can play as an aggressive 4-5. It can help with the rebound dilemma. Wouldn't cost much. And I'm guessing this is implied. Would play over Goga in the playoffs. If they are willing to get a center and cut probably Alize, maybe Jakar to do it, I'm all for it. I don't think they would do that, though. So I doubt that it happens, but I think it makes a lot of sense.
Is he still good? I mean, I remember watching him last year with those
Grizzlies. He's okay for the Grizzlies last year, right?
Yeah, I mean, was he? I don't know. I mean, I don't
– I just don't know how good he'd be in the playoffs. I guess maybe I was too excited.
Would he be like a poor man's Enes Kanter in the playoffs? I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking, right?
No, he's good on defense, and Kanter is the worst defender in basketball. So,
but is he good on defense now that he's 34 years old?
That's true. His perception is pretty big there.
That's, I mean, what, he'd just be somebody who rebounds and bullies you around.
Yeah. Basically. The idea, maybe Joe Noah is not the guy, but the idea makes sense, right?
Yes, the idea.
If they really wanted to, and I don't think they want to, but if they really wanted to get a 5 minutes a game center break last in case of emergency, I think it does have a lot of merit.
Yes.
But I don't think they would. Joe Noah is an interesting name. Did we ever bring him up? We talked about like guys who are
great. Well, he's not in the league this year, so I didn't even think about him. He's not playing this year.
Me neither. The biomarket's happening, but I said on Tuesday, which Adam probably hasn't listened to yet, I highly doubt they get involved in the biomarket in any way.
Oh, you're telling me they're not going to rig it for Reggie Jackson?
What do you mean rig it?
I don't know. Didn't he get bought out and be like Clippers in 5 minutes?
Well, yeah, I mean, his agent probably was like, hey, we're...
I know, I'm just making a joke. I saw your Twitter's dispute with somebody and just making a joke.
I think the biomarket is actually very fair.
I don't disagree with you.
Shady, like when Evan Turner is still on the Timberwolves and he's working out with the Clippers. It's like, why are they letting him do this? What if he gets hurt?
We're in a different league, man. Different league.
These big market free agent teams. Good question, though. The idea is... it's perhaps a little above the execution of the right player. Like Salamezri is my guy if that's the situation. Friend of the pod here, number two, even started his question with Hello Friends. Chris Carey at CHJ Carey says, Hello Friends, who do the Pacers match up with best in the first round of the playoffs this year? How important is home court for the Pavers? Intentional Pavers? I'm not sure. I think we might defer on this answer, but I'll let you go first.
Boston, I think, right?
Boston, wow. Okay, Boston is not one that... I'm not into that one, but go ahead.
So they've got smoked by the Heat twice. Well, they got smoked the one time, but they got beat by the Heat twice and smoked once by them. The Raptors just seem to have their number. The Raptors getting healthy. They only beat the Raptors when they weren't healthy, and so healthy Raptors have been pretty tough to beat, especially in the clutch because they just have so many veteran big game players between Van Fleet and Siakam and Lowry and Ibaka, so I don't know if they don't match up that well with them. You know, Philly, I guess, but not going to play Philly in the first round, so it's not going to matter. So I mean, it's really those three teams, right? It's Boston, Toronto, and Miami. And I think when it comes to Boston, they have the advantage down low, and they seem to play Boston well every time they play them. And I don't know, that seems to be like an advantage. I know last year they didn't play them well in the playoffs, but every time they've had a healthy Vic, they seem to play them pretty well. I guess maybe the way I put it.
I think the Hayward, Brown, Tatum, Smart. What's the quartet? There it is, above trio. I couldn't remember. The quartet of those guys, that is such a talented wing group that can overpower Vic and Warren and Brogdon and whoever the heck, Lamb, whoever, McDermott, all those guys. They're so good.
I don't know if they can. I think Tatum wins it. I think Brown wins the matchup, but I think the other two are definitely beatable.
The only minutes that I like, regardless, so a lot of like, this is way too zoomed out, but like, the only specific minutes that I'm obviously picking the Pacers to win is Cantor Soul Center versus Sabonis Soul Center. I don't care who the other eight guys
are. Sabonis is going to abuse them on the offensive end.
I mean, well, Tice is a good defender, though. So, like, they have a matchup for Sabonis. So, I am not as into that matchup as
– No, but remember, Tice isn't guarding Sabonis. Tice is guarding the pick and roll.
He will guard Sabonis in the playoffs.
No, but he's guarding the pick and roll is what I mean. He's not just like – you're just posting
Sabonis. I know. You're
running Sabonis in every way possible, which makes him a much less effective defender, at least.
Right. If Vic becomes a pick and roll master by the playoffs, maybe I'll swing to Boston. But they're actually last for me of the top three teams.
See, I
have them just a tick harder for the Patriots to beat than Miami.
So is this weird too? I actually think the other teams are better coached, and they all three have probably three of the top five coaches. So that's not saying a lot, but like I think the Heat and Raptors, considering the way Nick Nurse coached last year, are probably better coached, and that's why also maybe I like that against Boston a little bit better.
My Toronto, they just played them tough twice with like one of the worst stretches. TJ Warren missed both games, one game.
Both
games, and they played them tough both times and showed that they can match up with them pretty well. I get Norm Powell's out for them. But I think that the difference between what they will be in the early stages of Vic and come playoff time is a way bigger than the gap between what the Raptors are without and with Norm Powell. Marc Gasol, another big factor there. But I think they match up pretty well with Toronto. So Toronto has been my pick when this question comes out. Although I do think the Raptors are really good.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it kind of flipped the switch from this team that was like, for years was just like lovable loser every time first round and out to like this team now that like legitimately seems like they can just, they are cool as a cucumber.
That'd be so fun to win a title and still be good and just like no expectations. Just
crazy. Yeah. I mean, I just think their clutch play is just going to be impossible to beat in a close game. Yeah,
possible. Nick Nurse is a genius at the end of games.
I at least think Boston is beatable at the end of games because they've got Kemba basically kind of running things, and they'll have Tatum. But like, I just think with the youth there, there's a chance at least they fuck it up more than Toronto does.
That is possible. If Sixers go on a run and get up there, they match up horrible with them. They'd get killed.
I don't know though, actually, because Philadelphia's bench is kind of crap, and the team.
Hey, they just got two useful-ish guys. I actually think those two.
Philly's just not
anything, but come on, like they needed any breathing person on the bench.
I've had this for years. Philly's overrated as a team. I mean, they're good, but their pieces don't fit, so they're kind of off.
They used to fit, and then they kept getting worse and worse via additions.
Yes, that's what I mean. They just don't fit.
Horford was not a good pickup for them. I was all into that, and I was wrong.
Tobias Harris has been a 30. I mean, he's been good, but for 35 or whatever.
He's been really good since the start of the year, but he was really bad. So, Aris, whose name is hashtag Bring Lance Back, which we never talked about Lance being at that game against Toronto. That was pretty cool. Says, which player has perfected their role on the Pacers this season, whether that be on offense, defense, or just overall? Great question. My first guy that came into my head was Doug McDermott.
Yeah, that's same here.
Yes. Yes. Good answers. And some of that is coaching too. They finally have upped his volume of shots and things like that, but they really have mastered, okay, you fly around this screen from Sabonis, or you cut now, or you actually dribble drive on this, like things like that. He actually is like manipulating a defense. And last year he was just basically a spot up guy. So he is like this perfected in his own way, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, I think ideally he'd be shooting six threes instead of 3.5, but they have his role perfect, I think.
Yeah, the option is Sabonis, obviously.
Yes. Yep. They've mastered his skills. They've mastered Turner, like with Sabonis and Turner on one end of the floor, but not the other, which is sort of the other player's fault, if that makes sense. But like, they know what to do with Turner on D, and they always stick him on the guy that'll have him defending the pick and whatever's. And then Sabonis, I know, they just say, here's the ball.
I think Turner win the award for the opposite of this award. I mean, or opposite of the question.
Yeah. Because he's not quite master of what they want to do with him on offense.
No, and he hasn't. There was been a stretch where a lot of coaches were saying he needs time, making kind of excuses for him. I think it's becoming a common thing that he sort of just like doesn't quite process the game at a high enough speed to be able to adapt on the fly.
Yeah, he does need the set stuff to really
succeed.
He has occasional games where he busts out in his agency, but yeah, I'm with you there. Everyone else, like Brogdon, perhaps will be like, I think with Vic, we'll see a lot of changing roles that makes it harder, or that could change the answers to this. But Brogdon is like a 2.5 option instead of 1.5 option, could be where he needs to be.
Yeah, but we haven't seen it yet, so we'll see.
Yep. Yeah, we saw two games of it, and they almost won both of them. They were one bad Spencer Dinwiddie defensive possession away from winning both of them. Good question. Yeah. Yeah. Let's take a break before we do three more. I love this next one, Adam.
All right.
I know that he doesn't want the answer that I'm going to give. What historical Pacers player would be the missing piece on this Pacers team as they make a run? Well, that is from at Chunky Butta, B-U-T-T-A, Zachary Barnett.
So say you're going to say that because I know you're going to say.
Yeah, Paul George, right?
I have another one.
Like, I know I know this question wasn't designed to be like, pick the best Pacers player ever and just insert him on this team, but yeah, Paul George would be exactly what this team needs at the four. If he would play it, he never would.
David West or Jermaine O'Neal?
Yeah, David West is another great one that I thought about less in the star role specifically.
David West would give this team the edge it needs.
David West would be fantastic.
Well, and David West today, instead of shooting that jump shot he takes from the two-point line, he'd take 3-point shots. I mean, that's what
that too.
I mean, he was a good jump shooter, so he could definitely do it.
Being a 3-point one, this is a very random one that came into my head the first time I read this question. Mike Dunleavy.
Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Mike Dunleavy at the four. That would be like very role player-y, but that'd be a pretty good one, I think.
Should we say Mel Daniels? And isn't he like the best Pacer of all time, probably?
Yeah, including the ABA. I don't know much about his play style.
I just know you look at his stats, they were like off the charts.
Insane, yeah. But like small forwards in that league were like 6'8 post players.
Let's see. He says he was 6'9 playing center, and he was a 2018 guy.
If he has any floor game, I'll defer to the older crowd who listens, tweet me. If he had any floor game, yeah, he'd be great. They need that.
You know, I think Jermaine O'Neal would be a pretty good player on this team.
I mean, J.O. would be an awesome player on this team. I mean, J.O. would be an awesome player on any team, but that's a good one.
Yeah, but he could kind of play a little bit of four, a little bit of five. He could kind of – you could roll next to bonus, and he could be a little rim protector-ish. You know, he was really good at
basketball. The Rifleman. Got to get the Rifleman.
You know, it might be bad either, but Ron Artest might not be the worst one either.
Well, that'd be a great one, actually.
Right? His defense would be just like – he's kind of like
– Chuck Person's an efficient – TJ Warren level score, and more of those are always helpful.
Is it fair to call Ron Artest kind of like the Tony Allen of his day?
No, he was better, way better than Tony Allen.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was way better.
He was that level on D. I think he could play offense.
Could he? I don't really remember if he could.
I tried to type his name in on Basketball Reference to type Ron Artest like an idiot. I have to type Meta.
You can do both, can't you?
I don't think maybe you can. Yeah, Ron Artest had like 20 points a game in 15-point a game seasons. Tony Allen was like all defense all the time.
Wait, Ron Artest had a 24-point a game. Oh, he played 7 games that year. That's why.
That was his injured year. Yeah, he was mostly
like. No, that was suspended year, not injured.
We don't talk about that. He had a 20-point a game year in Sacramento. But yeah, he had high teens scoring year.
Yeah, I mean, his best year was obviously 03, 04, where he won Defensive Player of the Year and had 18 and was, 5.
Yeah, this is All Star year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, JL.
Yep. So, that's a great one, too. So, role player division, Artest or David West. Anyone division, I'm obviously taking PG.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
That was a good question. I enjoyed that. I forgot to have my phone out to be ready for next one. Next one, Ryan DeHoff at DeHasseldHoff says, with the weekend behind us, who do you predict represents the Pacers' next All-Star game? Also a great question. This one's harder because, like, Durant's back. Kyrie will play a full season. He'll never play a full season. Kyrie could be playing more games then. Who knows what young guys will be better. But, you know, if Vic is any semblance of even 18-19 Vic, he probably has the best shot, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be a pessimist and say probably no one.
Yeah, I also think that they have no All-Stars in it. It sucks because it's in Indy next year, but I also think they have none next year.
So let's look at the roster real fast. So the starters, Giannis, Embiid, Pascal, Kemba. I guess Trey, if the team is really bad, cannot
make it. Trey's in. Done.
But he's probably voted in, right? He'll get voted because that's the way it goes. Off the bench then, I don't have a list in front of me.
The guys who could drop out, like Lowry maybe?
Right, so like
maybe
so you gotta assume like Lowry drops out and then is replaced by Durant. if that happens,
that's right? True.
You got to assume if like Adebayo drops out, he's replacing Mike. But you don't think he will. But like, I think you got to assume Kyrie and Katie both make it next year. I think that's a good assumption.
Yeah, Kyrie had a decent. No, he didn't, but he had a decent case this year. You know.
But, yeah, I mean, I think the players that will probably drop out. Right, I mean.
I'm trying to find the full roster, but I'm apparently an idiot and don't know how. Okay,
Lowry. Kemba could fall, technically, maybe.
Lowry and Sabonis are probably the two most likely guys to drop out.
Yeah, and then I would say Kemba and Bam are probably – I'd only say Kemba because he's over the age of 30. Maybe he drops off a little bit. But
Yeah, it's tough. But it's tough. KD's basically a lock. And, like, what if Blake's really good again? What if Drummond is somehow revitalized to playing next to Kevin Love?
So
what if
Kevin Love
is really good again?
Here's what probably will happen. There'll be somebody who gets hurt, and that's how a Pacer will make it, right?
Or Zach LaVine could do it next year.
No, Zach LaVine's never going to make the All-Star team. He'll put up 40 points against you, and we'll win five games, and he still won't make it.
I love it. Beal next year right there again.
Yeah. Honestly, maybe Beal will be a Pacer next year.
Beal had a really good shot to make it this year. Honestly. So it's going to be very hard. Now, again, we're talking about injuries. Vic could be awesome again, and like Brogdon could regather that form he had early in the season. I highly, highly doubt Brogdon will be the All-Star.
So nobody from the Bulls made it this year. There's no like honorary team.
No. No, they put LaVine in the 3-point as like a mercy.
Should they go the baseball round and pick a guy from every team?
They did. They tried. They had everybody but the Spurs this year.
No. I mean, on the All-Star team.
Oh, no.
Right? You want the best 24 guys to see.
You absolutely want the best 24 guys. And then you have to throw in Dirk and Dwayne Wade for some stupid-ass reason.
Well, you can do that. I could give the honorary to the vets. I mean,
yeah, but they didn't give it to Vince this year. They don't really care. That's so stupid.
Well, it's because Vince is not really like that level of vet the way.
Stupid. It's stupid, Adam. Okay. So, but my answer, if you're making me say who's the most likely also on the team next year, is Oladipo.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But you never know. He has the best chance just because I think the chance is good enough to make it is higher than the chance the bonus makes next year. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the bonus is averaged like 19, 12, and 8. I mean, that's
possible.
Then he's the best center probably. And Mike should probably win should be voted in as a starter.
The last thing I'll say is if Turner gets traded, that would really help Sabonis potentially stats-wise to make it.
Yes.
Last question for this segment comes from Josh Hinkle at @IMJHinkle_99. Do you guys think that this is a very ironic timed question? Do you guys think this upcoming offseason we may see Miles Turner traded if the postseason is a complete sweep or hope a first round? A nice compliment. P.S. You guys do a killer job with the show. Always a constant listen on my walk to class every morning. Thanks, dude. I hope you are ready for class with all your Pacers content. To answer your question, absolutely.
Yeah, he's traded. If they lose the first round in less than five games or five or less, he's traded by.
Well, okay, I'm going to end addendum. I think it's definitely possible, even if they do well. But like, if he plays amazing and they lose in five, I kind of doubt it. But I don't think
that. I don't see how he plays amazing.
I was going to say, but I don't think there's a way he plays amazing and they lose.
They lose the first round in seven, but I think you get to that point too, right? Where, I mean, Larry Bird said this, and you get stale, right? If you lose, there'll be three first round exits in a row, right?
Right.
And then at some point, you got to mix things up and try something else, right? Raptors are a perfect example of doing that and try something else, right? Now, if they go two rounds and lose six or seven and he plays amazing and this turn kind of like it's like going to go up a level next year, then we're talking they're not going to make any moves. But if it was a first-round series, probably even in six or less where they're not even in the series, then he's probably the first one gone. Lamb is probably second on the list. Aaron Holiday probably third. You know, well, I guess Leaf would be the first one probably to add on a trade. But, like, those are the three guys. That's probably the order of who guys get traded next.
Right. Yeah, I certainly think it's possible. I think the playoffs all have a lot of potential bearing on the future of this team. Like, if they get swept, like, well, let's talk about McMillan pretty hard in the summer.
Yeah, well, we did this too, right? But, like, the way Justin Holiday is playing, he's almost making Jeremy Lamb very, very tradable if they're trying to keep the same amount of rotation, like eight good guys, right? It'd be great to have both of them, don't get me wrong, but if you have to get rid of one to prove the team, he's kind of proving that, oh, we can just play Holiday and not have Lamb.
Yeah. All right, one more break, and then we'll answer the last couple questions we got. I wish we got one more, but that's okay because two of these are kind of similar at the end. Anyway, first one, Trenton Claycomb. By the way, I loved his joke about DMing us six questions. He only sent us one, thankfully. This is kind of something we already talked about, although this is more general. Random, not Pacers specific question. What 2000s power forward would make a perfect small ball center in today's NBA? I have one if you don't have one right away.
Yeah, go ahead.
Andre Karolinko. You don't remember him well, do you?
No, I know who that is. I know who he is.
He was awesome. The five by five machine for that Jazz team. He was really good for a while. I think he'd be awesome. He could do a little bit of everything. And he was very tall. Well, not very tall, but he was pretty tall.
So I'm trying to think of centers like half a back.
That's why I saw content about him today because it's his birthday.
Well, like I said, Jermaine O'Neal, right? He'd be kind of a pretty good. He was.
That would be a very good one.
Right? He's a power four. I guess he played kind of more power four back in the day.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, going with like I'm pretty sure Patrick Ewing would be pretty good nowadays.
Yes.
So, he was also really good in his time. So I guess.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of power forwards in like the 90s were like actually centers.
Right.
Karolinko had a season of 15 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks, 1.5 steals.
That dude
did everything.
Can I give you one that is more to do with like the way modern technology is?
Yes.
I think Greg Oden, if he had been 10 years younger, would have been the Steph Curry, right? He would have hurt his knee. He would have maybe been like even Joel Embiid, right? They would have figured out how to like surgically repair it right, change his stance, whatever it was. Like the way he walked and ran, and then he'd have been an awesome player. Because he was kind of like an Embiid mixed with, I mean, like a better, you know, you take Embiid's offense with Al Horford's agility, and that's kind of where you get.
There's a reason he got picked over Durant. He was supposed to be insane.
Oh, if he isn't healthy, I mean, he's a bust because he got hurt, but if he'd been healthy, I mean, when I remember watching him in high school, oh my God, the dude just like could run him and my colleagues run the floor. I mean, they were just like, he was so smooth and he could just like from anywhere in the court, he'd catch the ball and throw it in the rim. I mean, he was something else.
I got a good one. I can't believe I just randomly remember this guy. Carlos Boozer.
Nah, that's a good one.
Carlos Boozer played a lot of four. He'd be a good modern guy. Two All-Stars. I did not know he made two All-Star teams. Yeah, he played I'm stuck on the Jazz for some reason, but he was an interior power forward for the Jazz for a while. It's pretty good.
Boozer though had
Pau Gasol at the four for those Lakers team. Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Peak Pau Gasol on the title Lakers team. I guess he played some center, but he was more of a four.
I'm trying to think of any, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think how far I can go, like, because most of the guys I think of had good careers, right? Like,
right.
Malone even had a really good career.
And they had, like, their best moments as a, like, when they got Bynum, Powell was, like, worse, you know?
Yeah. Well, you could play two centers back in the day, really.
Right, that's
really good. And,
I mean, Powell was better the year before when they started him. Doesn't matter. We're going off the rails.
Yeah. All right.
Mid-2000s NBA had some awesome dudes. I can't wait to like when it's like 2028 and we're like, oh, remember TJ Warren? That dude was awesome. He'd be a perfect small ball five on today's Houston Rockets.
Oh my God.
He'd be their tallest player, wouldn't he? I guess now they have Damari Carroll.
How Tucker's 6'9", so I guess
no, he's not. Tucker's like 6'6", dude.
Is he really? Yeah, I mean, you can see the thing about the Warriors head, because Draymond's not that tall either, but he plays big.
Basketball Reference has Tucker at 6'5".
Yeah, but he plays big, kind of like the way
Charles Barkley did. Yeah, so does Draymond. I know what you're saying. But TJ Warren plays big.
Yeah, but not the same way. Kind of like rim protection big.
I'm all in, dude. I really hope the Rockets thing works.
It's just not. They have so far, so good. Great. They're probably going to win a playoff series and lose the second round. That's what happens every year for them.
That will be a fault of having two very, very ball dominant guards.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It doesn't matter what they have. They have two.
I don't know if that's necessarily the fault of small ball.
They have two players that kind of counter each other. Russell Westbrook is just past his prime.
He's playing very well recently. To his
credit. Yeah, he's still past his prime, though.
We are diverging. Yes, we are. I think the last two questions are both about zone defense. How interesting.
Oh, Lord. I see why you want to keep going with this question.
Whiteland 5023 Bruce White says the Pacers played some zone early against the Bucks. Yes, they did. They had a little against the Nets, too. Says that seems like a good way to take advantage of Miles' defense. Should the Pacers experiment with more zone defense? Yeah. I don't see why not. Again, you're right. It does stick Miles down low more. It helps guys who like Jeremy Lamb, for example, who kind of stink keeping their guy in front of him with having a crutch behind him. It's not like you can't roll it out a ton, and they have a ton of good man principles, and they have a ton of good man-to-man defenders. And, you know, most teams use zone as like a gimmick, few stops kind of thing anyway. Like very rarely do you get the Heat kind of teams who roll it out a bunch. But yeah, I mean, experimenting with it for 10, 15 possessions a game, sure.
Sorry for my dog barking in the background.
I thought that's what I heard. Cora, it's come on. We're talking about
zone defense. Yeah, I know. Defense. She's not like zone defense. She's grabbing her leash and just running around the house. But we'll ignore that for now. So my thing about zone is it doesn't work in the playoffs because as soon as you pull it out and it works for one game, a coach can immediately adjust to it just fine and figure it out about. Because it's kind of a gimmick, right? Zones really work well in the regular season because you can kind of like throw them at surprise. Maybe the team is prepared for you and whatnot. Same way with the press, right? But when you do them in the playoffs, any good coach can figure out how to like game plan against it and beat it basically. Because like zone has so many weak spots to it and you have good shooters, you just beat it basically.
Yeah.
You know, it works in college for the same reason that you can't coach guys up the same way you can coach pros. But
high-end guys are worse shooters in college.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Syracuse. I went to Syracuse. I watched them play games for three straight years. And it's also just like the zone sucks to watch. It does. It's like not
fun. It worked okay in these two, to the credit of the Pacers. It worked okay in these games. And I do applaud, like, Caitlin wrote a really good article about it. Of course. I mean, everything she does is really good. But, like, it is really helpful for them. They have good personnel to make it happen. It does throw the other team off, and then they switch right back to man pretty quickly after most of the time.
Yeah, I think it only sort of works in the regular season moments where teams are not
prepared. I'm with you there.
Day in and day out. I think when you get to a playoff, the playoffs, you almost have to adjust three different times to win a series, right? If you're playing a good team, a good competitive series, you have to, you know, you have the first time you win a game, then the team adjusts and they beat the next game. Then you got to adjust again to win another game and so on and keep doing that three or four times. I mean, you saw that. I think the best example is the Cavs Pacers series a couple years ago, right? The first two Pacers smoked them. Then the Cavs adjusted and the Pacers had to adjust back. And then the Cavs adjusted again and the Pacers had to adjust back and they didn't do it enough times because the Cavs made one last adjustment. They pulled out the wild card of Tristan Thompson and that won game seven. And so I think the zone can play a role in that where it worked for a game, but I think ultimately you got to know how to play defense man-to-man to win a playoff series.
I agree. Our last question was also about zone defense. Can you believe that? Two questions about zone defense.
I feel like you wrote these instead of me because you're really a zone defense kind of guy.
I am not a zone defense kind of guy.
I don't know. This is like,
when you talked about it, I like it as a gimmick defense, like the boxing one to throw Curry off and then not sticking with it was genius from Nick Nurse. But you can't do it the whole time. Indy Zach 89 is his at. His name is just Zach. He says, after reading Caitlin Tagter's article on Pacers playing zone, do you think they are possibly using zone as an alternative to use it to mask deeper injury-like issues, mainly Brogdon, who hasn't seen the symptoms returning from his concussion? Zone would help someone like Brogdon, who is struggling to keep guys in front of him. Though I don't necessarily think they're using zone specifically to help Brogdon, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think Brogdon's having one of those years from hell, like Turner had what last year?
Oh my gosh, man!
Where like every time he moves, he gets hit by something. He's had a back injury. He had right Turner two back had
two
injuries
years ago, right? Like 2017.
Turner like had like the most weird injuries. He had a football concussion injury, which is a sample injury. He had an elbow injury that's common in baseball. What else? He did something else too. Like
he got hurt on the dunk. I forgot about that one.
He threw out his UCL, which is like the most common thing in baseball to do. That's the Tommy John. Yeah. But it never happens in basketball because why would you? You don't use that muscle very often.
Yeah, Brogdon got elbowed by his teammate and
he got cold cocked by his teammate. Very much.
Yeah, so dislocated his finger on the ball. It's like people are like, I get that he has a history of injuries, so people throwing out injury prone has merit. But like this year, I don't think anything about his body is failing him.
I think it's just been some bad luck. I mean, the concussion thing has been really bad. I think for players this year, because like it's something that it monitor really well, and it's been like it just like it seems to hit the pitch hard this year. At least you know, right. You had war in the six games. I mean, you just and I don't like. Concussions are almost unpreventable. Like, it's kind of just like you got to just – it's kind of a luck thing it feels like too, depending on how hard you got hit. Like if Turner hit him like 3 degrees the other way, maybe he doesn't get hit, his head doesn't shake or whatever. Like they're all kind of – it's kind of a just a luck of the draw thing, I guess.
Right. So to answer the question, I think the zone is mostly just used as like a – we have the personnel to do this and it's going to throw off the other team. Not necessarily as like a – this will make Brogdon more useful because he truly – like we know he's a good defender. We saw it early in the season. I was very impressed with his defense for a while. And it has been pretty terrible recently. There's no way to sugarcoat it, but I don't think they're doing zone with any specific player in mind or anything like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the things like zone and press are, if you can execute them really well, are good to throw out because you saw the pitchers got confused by them. And if you can figure out how to make them work, they can just sort of help you win a few possessions that can become critical in a game where you're close. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think that's why they're doing the zone. And I think if, you know, if you can win like three or four at the zone and that turns into like a couple good offensive plays, then all of a sudden that's going to be the difference in winning a game by 3 or 4 points.
Yep, I'm with you. Thank you, everybody, for the questions. Mailbags are fun. And that was the perfect length, I think, Adam.
Yes, I think we should do like 9-question episodes so we can do one in the summer. We get like 45 questions.
And we can make it all of August, basically.
Instead of an hour. About August, like, it'd be like, how does this guy fit? How does this guy fit? How does this guy fit? I don't know. We'll find out when the game starts.
Why didn't they sign a max player with their no cap space?
Why didn't they trade for Karl-Anthony Towns? Well, he wasn't tradable, apparently.
Ha! Hey, yeah, see, they got D'Lo. Now he's definitely not available.
Oh, I know, but
I don't have to hear you talk about that anymore.
Do we think that blows up by what, mid next year?
Yeah, gosh.
The summer.
I'm into it for all the fun, and they have a lot of young guys I like, but I don't know how good they'll be.
That team next year is gonna win what, 20 games again?
They're gonna have pretty bad defense, yeah.
Maybe there's a move around to see him. Maybe they can. Well, they don't have their first round pick. Maybe they win the lottery. They can trade the number one pick for something.
They do have their first round pick in this coming season.
Well, no, they don't. Is it lottery protected?
21 first round pick is what they.
No, I thought it was lottery protected this year, and then it becomes 21 first round pick unprotected.
I don't remember. I
thought that's what happened. I'm like 80% sure that's how it is.
Adam, tomorrow's show is about a real Pacers basketball game and not the skills challenge or.
Yeah, well, the Knicks, I guess like I can't make fun of the Knicks. I already lost them once, but the Knicks are not a real basketball.
Yeah, but the guy who killed them is gone. He's on the Clippers now, so.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
They were even worse.
Did you, so I don't know if you caught this. So the Ringer did, I think Russell did this thing where he was like, all 30 NBA teams, like they're like what they can say on Twitter. And he pulled the Knicks up and said, I've got nothing. like they're like how they can retort back to other fan bases, and they're like, nope, I got nothing on them.
they're definitely building for the future. They did the right thing to trade Morris, but it was very odd that they fired their president of basketball.
Do you think the Knicks win a playoff series this decade?
The 2020s, probably.
I doubt.
Yeah, they're the Knicks. They'll be like the Lakers and suck for 5 years and then get someone awesome. Like,
have you ever got somebody awesome actually in free agency?
They basically used free agency as a bully to get Carmelo, but
not okay,
to my knowledge.
But was Carmelo really that awesome? I mean, he was good. Don't get me wrong, he's pretty good. But like,
he was that awesome. Yes.
But like, I don't know. Is I mean, like the Heat have gotten Jimmy Butler.
You're right. Chris they do Bosch. Not typically lure very good free agents.
The Heat have gotten Jimmy Butler, Chris Bosh, and LeBron in the last 8 years. The Lakers have gotten Shaq. Shaq, Kareem. LeBron now, I mean, they've gotten like three legit guys right over the past, you know, since the past 3 years.
I Googled
years.
Best Knicks free agent signings and it pulled up an article just about their 2019 summer. And I thought this list was their best free agent signings and had Julius Randle number one. And I was like,
no, but I'm saying like the Knicks really have not had that many like awesome free agent signings. Like, it's not like, you know, you've seen it happen with the Lakers.
I had to be missing something. I just have to be. Allen Houston was really good. They got him. That was the 90s. Like, Amare.
Yeah, again, I mean,
defensive player of the year level Tyson Chandler.
It feels like to me the NBA is around two cities right now. Is Miami and LA? That's where people want to be.
Look at you. Look.
And well, I guess you could say Brooklyn, I guess, because the two guys that went there. But
yeah, I'm excited for tomorrow. Should be fun. Talk about actual basketball games, and then of course we'll return to normalcy with a weekly show next week to talk about their two games this weekend.
I'm pumped.
You can follow Adam at FriedmanAdam5, me at TEastNBA, and this show to submit questions next time at Locked On Pacers. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Hope you had a fun All-Star break, and we will see you tomorrow.